Morning. Today's daf is Lamed Hey in Bechoros. Let's start again. Today's Lamed Vav. We're starting at Lamed Hey. And we're going to start on Lamed Hey Amad Aleph. And we're back at the Mishnah. The Mishnah gave us a basic yesod, which is that if somebody placed the blemishes on the animal, not for you, but on their own, it was their own idea, it was their own volition, and they put the blemish on the animal, so at that point in time, you can enjoy the animal. Once they're doing it for you, they basically now become an extension of you, and so therefore, you cannot the animal. Again, the idea that we've been seeing throughout this fifth parak is that the mum has to happen naturally, it has to happen organically, and once you put a blemish on the animal will not be permitted. To what degree the Chachamim give you a kanasa, that we discussed yesterday. Machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chacham. Rabbi Eliezer says the animal will never be permitted, and the Chachamim say, no, you're going to have to wait for another blemish to occur. Okay, but it's clear, though, that once you put a blemish on the animal, so at that point in time, the animal is not going to be permitted yet, and our Mishnah is telling us two separate halachas about somebody putting a blemish for you. First, the Gemara gives a story with a Roman.
Good
question. So let's go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us two stories. So the Mishnah, let's reread the Mishnah quickly. Ma'isa b'zachar shavachelim, zachar yosar medudal, v'ra'u kastor echad, v'amar mativo sholzeh. Okay? So the Roman sees the animal, long hair, it's old, and he asks a simple question. What's going on? So Amru lo, so listen carefully to the response. Bechor hu ve'inu nishchat ela im kein haya bo mum. It's a bechor, and we're waiting for it to get a blemish. But there was no instruction to the Roman that the Roman should be the one giving it the blemish. We just simply are factually telling the Roman what's the story. So the Roman took an instrument, gave it a blemish, and now the matter was presented in front of the Chacham, and the Chachamim said, fine, it's fine. Because he didn't do it for you. You didn't ask him to do it for you. I'm sorry. And then he continued doing it now, understanding that you really would like it if every one of them get blemished, all the Bechoros get blemished. But at that point in time now, with his new understanding of what the consequence is, and his new understanding that you like that, so now at that point in time, he's doing it for you. And that, from that point in time, it's also.
Why did he say the first one is also like that?
Because you didn't instruct him to do that. You just gave him facts.
The next one also you don't instruct him.
He understands.
How would the Roman know which one is the Bechor? Somebody would have to.
I assume they mark it.
They had long-haired ones.
I assume so.
Pamacheres,
the Gemara tells a similar, I'm sorry, it's a Mishnah. The Mishnah tells a similar story. And their game was, we'll tie the tails one to another. And one of the tails snapped off, and wow, it was a Bechor. And again, they had no intent of removing, of making a blemish on the Bechor. They were just playing. And now the kids saw, oh, look at that. Meaning, we're not just playing, we're being mati bechoros. Let's go. And halcha v'kashu zamos bechoros achem v'asru. And they now tie the tails of bechoros one to another in order so that the tails would come off, so that there'd be a blemish, in order for that the owner would be able to eat it. And the chachamim said, no. Zakla kolshu l'da'ato asra shalol l'da'ato muter. If he's doing it for you, for your consent, with your authority, so then it's usher, otherwise it would be mutter. So the first thing Gemara deals with is these two stories are basically speaking to the same idea, and why does the Mishnah need to articulate two separate stories, or two separate groups of people? So, Pamacheres Hayetzrichad Yeshmino Vikocham Dalo Asa Lemisrach, Havakon Dasa Lemisrach, Eim Alam. So, as far as the case of the Ovei Kochavim, so this is not a behavior that's going to stay with him. Meaning, at that point in time, when it comes to a non-Jew, does he really care? It was one sheep that was long hair, and he's not going to care. But I'll tell you what, though. I may have been concerned with the child. Meaning, a child, when we say child over here, we mean Jewish child. Because Jewish child, Once you allow it even one time, that's the kind of behavior that'll just imitate itself again and again. And even if you say from this point forward, oh, you know, it's not mutter from this point forward, but still, permitting it even that one time, the child may get into a habit of putting blemishes on a bechor. So I might have thought for the child, even the first time, we shouldn't allow it. And as far as the child is concerned, look, I understand that he's a child and he was just playing the first time around. But when it comes to an Ovei Kochavim, even the first time, you'll say, oh, you know, if the Ovei Kochavim could do it in this case, maybe somebody else can do it in another case. And you may confuse this with another scenario, almost equal. Of course, the difference is that he's doing it on so that the Bukhor becomes mutter. So basically, both cases need to show off a various facet of the halacha. Now, Rav Kitina is going to suggest that the way you present this information to the non-Jew is going to be extremely important. Right? In the Mishnah, the language of the Mishnah is you just simply factually telling the non-Jew, you know, I can't eat this bechor unless it has a mum. Right? I was trying to be careful about the way I said it. Unless it has a mum. I never suggested to him that he put the blemish on. That was his idea. I didn't ask him to do it, so that's why it would be okay. But if my language was a little bit different to the non-Jew, if I said nase bomom, command amalei zilave beimom adami, that's like saying, you know what, you should go put a blemish on the animal. Now, think about it, because it's not really the same. I didn't tell him to do that. I just simply said there has to be a mum made on the animal. But Rav Kitina is worried about that's basically tantamount to instruction. Okay. I'm a Rav Mechti. So Rav says, I disagree. Mimelehu, mali haya, mali na'ase. It doesn't make a difference. Meaning, that wasn't instruction. If I use the word haya versus the word nase, nase does not mean I need you to put a blemish on the animal. Nase means a blemish needs to happen to that animal. Nase is nifal, right? The little grammar that I know, right? Nase is nifal. I'm not instructing him to do that. So Rava says this is not tantamount to instruction. Ela nase nami mimelahu veloshna. So Rava just simply disagrees. It doesn't matter whether I say haya or nase. Point is that for that first time, I didn't instruct him to do it, and he did it, so that first time I could enjoy the bechor. Ze'aklal kol shehu ladas aser, lasuye mai, lasuye grama. You know the Gemara always does this. When the Mishnah says ze'aklal, the Mishnah is speaking to another halacha, although not explicitly, but when we overgeneralize, we mean to include something else. So what are we coming to include? A grama, meaning, like we discussed earlier, he didn't actually put the blemish on, but he caused the blemish to happen. Putting a little corn muffin right on the ear of the bechor, and a dog comes along and eats it. Okay, that's grama. And as we pointed out yesterday, that is prohibited as well. Although I suggested yesterday that might be a debate, but certainly the halacha is grama is also going to be also when it comes to hatalas mum, putting a blemish on the bechor. Shalola das, now we go to the next part of the Mishnah, which says that if it's not for you, meaning you didn't ask him to do that, so then it's going to be mutter. This comes to include mesiach lefi tumo. What does that mean? Rashi writes, shalosh shalom kazdor, mativo. There was no dialogue between the Roman and you. Ela hematzma mesiach lefi tuman. We just happened to be having a conversation right around a non-Jew. And va'omrim re'elo yishchazela olam ela al yedei mum. And over the course of our conversation, I'm reading Rashi. Over the course of our conversation, we say to one another, you know, it's a shame. If we only had a blemish on this animal, we'd be allowed to eat this animal. Okay? But we didn't tell him to do that. We're just, again, having a conversation. And it wasn't our intent. Now, I know, you know, things get a little bit fuzzy right now because it could be that we're having the conversation so that he gets the hint. But the halach is, and that's what the Gemara is trying to point out, is that Mesiach Lufi Tumo, if you're genuinely just simply conversing about yourselves and you really aren't intending on intimating to the non-Jew, so then So then the non-Jew does it. You didn't instruct him. It would be okay. By the way, all this, I think we could file under, and the Gemara never says this, and Rashi never says this, but I think we could file all this under Amir La'akum. It's interesting. Amir La'akum, we generally understand to be a Shabbos idea. It could be that the whole concept of Amir La'akum generates, extends even beyond Shabbos. There are other Gemaras that support this idea of Amir La'akum, meaning if I can't do something, I can't ask a non-Jew to do it as well. It is, generally speaking, viewed as a Shabbos concept. But over here, the basic idea is that if I can't put a blemish on the animal, I can't ask a non-Jew to do it for me as well. So perhaps that's the overarching idea in this Gemara, is that Samir La'akum. Although,
this story couldn't have happened with a Jew.
Huh?
The same story could have happened to a Jew.
No, because if a Jew did it, we'd have a Knas. Then we'd have to put a Knas on.
Even though he didn't do it.
Interesting, interesting. Even though he's not going to benefit from it.
Kind of like a comparison between Shogegim and...
Interesting. Okay, I'm not sure. Hayy b'chor redfo ba'ata v'asa b'ma marries a shochtan alav. Okay, let's talk about a case which you might not have thought to be natural or organic, and it is considered a natural blemish. Animal's chasing you. And to defend yourself, you kick the animal. Okay, out of self-defense. That's considered a natural blemish. Now, you could have argued the point, meaning... A natural blemish is, let's say, an animal walks under a fence and he gets scratched. A natural mum is that the animal eats and while eating cuts his lip. That's a blemish. But here, you actually put the blemish on the animal, but out of self-defense. That's also considered organic. That's also considered natural. Now, if that already is a chiddush, and listen to the Gemara now. Now, Amar Rav Papa, Loshanu Ela Shabbat B'Shas Radifa. We're going to have two versions of Rav Papa. The first version of Rav Papa is going to really make a lot of sense in the following. If you kick the animal while the animal's chasing you, that's okay. Meaning, not only is that okay, we're recommending you defend yourself, but that's considered a natural blemish. And therefore, you can eat the Bechor. Aval Acher Radifa Lo. Now, but what if you kick it after the animal finished chasing you? Right? Just to have that picture of your mind of the rodeo clown, right? The bull's done. He finished. Okay. Didn't get the clown. Okay. Now the chase is over and the clown is still angry and he runs over and he kicks it at that point in time. Rav Papa says that's not natural. That's not organic. And so therefore that's not considered a blemish. One in which we're allowed to eat the bechor. Gemara says pshita. Gemara says, I think that's obvious, right? In other words, that's not self-defense. So the Gemara gives the following explanation. Yeah. In other words, you're still angry at the animal, right? That animal had no business chasing you, right? And that kick was not to make a mom. That kick was just simply out of your anger. Yeah. That was an anger kick. And so maybe you could suggest that that's considered a natural blemish. Okay, kamash malan. And the chiddush of Rav Papa is that that's not natural. Ika d'amri, now the Gemara has another version. And you know what? We're going to not only like this havamina, we're going to actually accept the havamina. Amar Rav Papa lo tema b'shas redifa in avashol b'shas redifa lo el alafil la'achar redifa nami. My time at Saruhu demitkar. Second version of Rav Papa says... Even if you kick it after it chases you, that's considered a natural blemish. Because the kick was not to make a blemish. The kick was just because you're angry. You just didn't like the fact that this animal chased you. And, you remembered the anguish it caused you, and that's it. You let it out. I'm Rav Yehuda Mota La'atol Mom B'Bechor Korim Shiyatza La'avir Ha'olam. Okay. The Bechor gets its Kedusha. Yeah,
it could be. No?
With the Gemara doesn't differentiate, but it could be. Next, okay, the Kedusha of the Bechor only receives its Kedusha when it comes out. So you could put a blemish on the animal in utero. So that would mean stick your hand into the uterus of the animal and put a blemish while it's inside. Amrava gidi beudne imra besifsa se. When it comes to a young kid being born, so the best place to do is to nick the ear and sheep on the lip. Now some say that the sheep also you can hit the ear. Now what's the concern? Meaning why are we being so specific about where we want to put the blemish on the animal? And the answer is very simple. Because what you're basically doing is you're putting the blemish on the animal before it comes out, but basically right before it comes out. Now here's the problem. Legally, halachically, when is the birth of an animal, and the same thing is true by human as well, at what point is it considered born? Majority of the head needs to come out. Once the majority of the head exits the animal, even well before the rest of the animal comes out, it's considered now born. At which point in time now you cannot put a blemish on the animal. So basically what we're looking for is when can I blemish the animal right while it's at the entrance of the canal, but it hasn't come out yet. Once the head comes out, that's it. It's done. Story over. So right. So the ear, and again, how many animals did I assist in birthing? Right. The correct answer is zero. So I'm just speaking to what the Gemara is trying to convey to us. So Amar Derech Tzad of Nafik. So even with the ear, generally speaking, the ear is coming out after the majority of the head has come out. And so that would mean that a nick of the ear would not be okay because the animal now is already born. So sometimes the animal comes out b'tza'adav from its temple, meaning a little bit sideways, not head down, not crown down, but a little bit sideways, so that the ear actually extends out first, so that you could put a blemish on the ear and the animal is still considered in utero. Okay, Amarava. Another halacha, it seems to be like an assortment of little halachas over here. In order for a blemish to be considered a blemish, it has to be a physically noticeable blemish. Rashi says, mumshe begalui. It has to be an exposed area, meaning when we talk about blemishes, it's almost like the opposite of trefa. Trefa is an internal wound. Not necessarily. There are trefas that we can see externally, but trefas are generally internal. Physical blemishes are always external. It has to be external, otherwise it's not a blemish. So the Gemara now is going to be discussing specifically, what if it's in the mouth, but you can see it when the animal opens up its mouth. And not even all the time, meaning Rava says, if it's eating, you can't see it. But if it opens up its mouth to release a sound, right? So ache uposech piv harbe. The animal cries out, which requires a larger opening of the mouth, and now you can actually see it. So Rava says that's considered a blemish. That's considered an external blemish. My kamash melantanina. So the Gemara says, we knew this already. It's a Mishnah. Mishnah coming up later on. Ha-chutin. Ha-chutin ha-chitzona shenifkamu v'shenigmamu ha-penimis. Shenekru, the Mishnah says that if you have chutin, now debate in terms of what chutin actually are. Right now we'll call them incisors. And the penimios, those are the molars. Shenekru, if they become uprooted, that's considered a blemish. My time alamishim dechipai mechzei. And the Gemara says, now as far as these teeth are concerned, you're not going to see the teeth until the animal opens up its mouth wide. And that's still considered a blemish, which obviously means it's an external blemish. So Amar Rav Papa, Rav Nami, time at the Masisim Afari. Shukamar says, you're right, we learned this. Rava is just assisting us understanding the Mishnah. That's all. My time, ne'ekru, have moma mishum dechipai mechse. The reason why is because once it opens up its mouth, now you can see it. Okay, good. All right. Move on to a new topic in the fifth perek. And that is the topic of ne'emanus, credibility. Okay. Now, you understand that there's a lot of suspicion abounding because, generally speaking, when you talk about witnesses testifying, if there is personal benefit for the testimony, we look at them and we say, you can't testify, right? Okay. This is what's called, right? We've seen this a lot throughout the Gemaras. Third paragraph of Sanhedrin, big location over there where we talk about this, Nogea B'Davar. Nogea B'Davar is just the basic idea that if you have a personal benefit, if you have a vested interest, you lose your credibility. It's that simple. Okay, plain and simple. So now, what we're going to be discussing over here, over the course of the next daf, is do Kohanim have credibility? Meaning they were given the Bechor. Bechor now has a blemish. It makes all the difference in the world whether this blemish happened naturally or whether it happened right by human intervention. And if it happens naturally, the Kohen's allowed to eat it. If it's by human intervention, so the Kohen's not allowed to eat it. And how do we know this information? So that's an important question. And the answer is primarily going to be, Kohen, you have a vested interest. You can't testify.
Can I ask you a basic question? A couple of days ago, didn't we talk about this whole time zone where you have 12 months and 30 days in terms of when the guy has to give it to the Kohen? And that was based on the fact that the animal developed the moon before, and the guy had to take it to the expert.
No, the care of the animal, that 30 days, 50 days.
No, remember, it was that's in year, and then, you know, if the animal within the first year, if the animal developed the moon, you had some days that year to give it to the mom. And if it developed in the 12th month, you had 30 days after that. But the whole point was that after the animal developed the moon, you would take it to an expert.
Right.
The expert would verify this at the moment, then you would give it to Cohen.
So yeah, but
in this case, you're talking about that. The Cohen has already gotten the animal.
Yeah, because because you can, you don't have to hold on to the animal, and quite frankly, you don't want to hold on to the animal. It's maintenance that you really don't want. You're entitled, meaning the Mishnah's. Understood. But for the first 30 or 50 days, you need to keep it because the animal needs to nurse.
Right.
After that point in time, if you want to unload and you want to say to the Kohen, look, you know, we're waiting anyway. You take it and you hold on to it and you maintain it. You have the right to do so. And the Kohen will do that simply because right now he won't be able to benefit from it. But when it develops that blemish, he'll be able to enjoy it. It's a risk involved.
Well, if he says no, you'll give it to another.
Yeah, right. Correct. But you don't have to watch it and maintain it after that point in time. We only said 30 and 50 because of nursing. We want the animal to nurse from its mother. So, there are going to be a lot of opinions over here. Let's see if we can straighten everything out, organize all this information. And we start with the Mishnah. Kol ha-mumim ha-ru'uyin lavo bidei adam, ro yisol ne'amanim. Ro'in ko'anim ein ne'amanim. So we start off with the position of a Tanna Kamma. And the Tanna Kamma says, look, any mum that can come by humans, like anything we've been discussing up until this point in time, a nick of the ear, a slit of the lip, right? A gouged eye. In other words, a blemish that you and I can make. So at that point in time now, Kohanim are not believed, and Yisraelim are believed. Okay?
In terms of what?
In terms of telling us now that this was a natural blemish, and I'm not the one who put, or not me, anybody for that matter, did not put this blemish on the Bechor. Well, it depends. In other words, Yisraelim, we need to know. We just simply need to know. We need witnesses to tell us what happened.
Are you going to do that? Are you going to say every Bechor will have to have a
two people? Okay, wait. I know. Okay, just wait. There's a lot to discuss over here. Let's just get our position straight. Right now, let's just get rooted in all the positions. So we have first the Tanna Kamma, and the Tanna Kamma makes a basic division between Kohen and Yisrael. So, with no disrespect to Kohanim, you're not believed, right? And with respect to Yisraelim, you are believed. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer Neman, Hu Al Shel Chaver, Vei Neman Al Shel Atzmo. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, a Kohen can testify about somebody else's Kohen's Bechor, just not your own. Okay, so even in the world of Kohanim, if you want to testify about another Kohen's Bechor, that would be fine. You want to testify about your own, that's no. Because you're going to be a direct beneficiary of your testimony, you're no gei b'davar, you can't. And Rav Meir omer chashal adavar lo danav lo me'ido. And Rav Meir says no. If you're chashal adavar, if you are suspected, meaning if you can't testify about your own bechor, you simply cannot testify about anyone else's bechor. Now, as I present the three positions in the Mishnah, Rav Meir sounds a lot like the Tanna Kamma. Okay. That's going to be an issue. Everyone following? Meaning the Tanakhama made that basic division. Kohanim, you're not believed. Yisraelim, you are believed. And Rav Meir says, Kohanim, you're not believed. Okay, that requires clarification. Good. But before we do that, let's layer on another couple of opinions on top of this Mishnah. Well, we'll see. Let's see. Just wait. I'm only pleading patience because there's more information coming. I understand. We'll get to that. Rav Yochanan, Rav Elazar. Now, in our Mishnah, how do you even understand the Tanakhama? Subject to a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar. Chanamar. Now, if you go back to the Mishnah and read it carefully, it says, "Roei Yisrael, shepherds." Now, in general, you should know, right? And the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, third Perek, speaks to this idea as well. Shepherds are not the higher end of society. Okay? Now, it's funny because Moshe was a shepherd, Yaakov was a shepherd. Okay. David was a shepherd. Okay. So you have a real who's who in shepherds. Okay. But shepherds were not considered the higher end of society, and we generally don't even afford credibility to a shepherd. But over here, though, you have to understand, the shepherds are the ones with the animals. They're going to know what happened. But when we say Roei Yisrael, what exactly does that mean? So, Chanamar Roei Yisrael Bei Kohanim. So, Ne'emanim. When we say Roei Yisrael, we mean that the owner of the property is a Kohen. The shepherds are Yisraelim. And we are going to believe the Yisraelim. Now, why wouldn't we? Lilegim alo cheshinan. Because you may construct the following argument. You're a shepherd who is a Yisrael. Now, if you go over and you testify, I saw the blemish. It happened naturally. It happened organically. Now, that basically means the owner of this animal, the Kohen, is now allowed to eat it. But maybe the shepherd will say to himself, look, he'll invite me for dinner tonight. Now, you'll remember, by the way, that Beit Shammai says, right. Oh, good. You remember that Beit Shammai says he can't be invited for dinner, but we don't pass him like Beit Shammai. We go like Beit Hillel. He'll invite me tonight to dinner because, think about it, the only reason why he's eating this bechor is because I said it was a natural blemish. So, you know what? This is what's called legima. Legima means, you know, to give a guest something to eat. A little bit of a kickback. Thank you. So the Gemara says that's what the Tanakhama's position is. We're not worried about Legima. However, if we were to flip, if we were to have the owners of the land being a Yisrael, and the Kohanim are the shepherds, Ein Ne'emanim, they're not believed. Meimar Amar Kevin Dekatar Chanabei Lo Shavik Lididi V'Yav La'Achrina. Because now we see the incentive. The incentive is the Kohen is the one who's being matir. The Yisrael says, oh, thank God. And now who do I give it to? And the Kohen's thinking to himself, well, I'm a shepherd. I'm his shepherd. I've been working for him. What is he going to do? He's going to give it to somebody else? So there is too much incentive for the Kohen to testify, even though it's not an absolute, but still it's enough to discredit him. Now, you can imagine, if the Kohen's working for Yisrael, and we're not going to believe the Kohen, what if the Kohen's working for another Kohen? There, for sure, we're not going to believe him, because they're gomlin, reciprocity. The I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Meaning the Kohen now goes over to the Kohen that he works for, and he says, look, I'm a shepherd of your, I'm shepherding your animals, and I'm telling you that this blemish happened naturally, and then you know, next time that the other Kohen is going to get the opportunity, he'll return back favor. So once we're worried about reciprocity, that's it. We're going to totally discredit. Okay. You understand now? That's one understanding of the Tanakhama. Now let's just finish off the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, I'm not worried about reciprocity. Meaning as long as he's not testifying about his own animal, we're fine. And then Rameir comes along and says, once you're chashud, you cannot testify, period. Okay. That's one understanding of the Mishnah. Now let's go through a second understanding of the Mishnah. V'chad amar ro'i sol v'hen kohanim ne'emanim. Now, the second version of how to understand the Mishnah is that Roe Yisrael means the Roam are actually Yisraelim. Thank you. The Roam are actually the Roam are actually Kohanim, right? And the owners are Yisraelim. They are believed. Why? Me'amar l'shavik sorba mirabanan v'yahiv li'dd. Because even though the shepherd is a Kohen, and even though you can make the argument, and by the way, we made the argument just our first go around with the Mishnah, and that was, well, who else is he going to give it to? But the shepherd Kohen is going to say to himself as follows, and I know this is going to sound a little sad and depressing, but basically like this. I'm a nobody. I'm a shepherd. He's not going to give the Bechor to me. He's going to give a Bechor to a Talmud Chacham, a Kohen Talmud Chacham. So basically, I'm out. I'm out of the picture. And therefore, there really is no incentive for him to come forward and to state anything other than what happened. Either the blemish happened naturally or did not happen naturally, but he's not going to get a kickback. So therefore, allow him to testify and allow him to be believed. This is the Tanakama of our Mishnah. And that is position number one. Amar lo shavik sabrei ban v'yahav li didi. Ro kehenu v'hen Yisraelim. However, if the owner is a Kohen and the shepherd is Yisrael, ain't a neman l'chashin l'legima. There, I'm worried. I'm worried about legima that he'll invite me over for dinner tonight. V'chol shekin kohen l'kohen delo d'chashin l'gomlin. And we're for sure going to worry about reciprocity if owner and shepherd are Kohanim. And reciprocity or an invite for dinner. So in other words, there's a lot of incentive for him to not tell the truth. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, as long as it's not you're testifying about your own, you can testify. Okay. And Rabbi Meir says no, no, and no. We got Rabbi Meir clear. Rabbi Meir, there's no, it's simple. Rameir says a Kohen cannot testify, period. Done and done. Rav Shimon Gamliel says a Kohen cannot testify about another. I'm sorry, cannot testify about his own animal, but he can testify about another. It really comes down to what's the Tanakhama's position. Now, Bishlam Laman Damar Ro Yisrael V'hein Kohanim Ne'emanim. Now, look. That second pshat is excellent. Excellent. Because it comes down now that the Tanakhama allows a Kohen to testify if the owner is the Yisrael. Because there's no incentive. He's not going to give it to me. And so therefore there's no incentive. And then, and now you understand, Rameir is disagreeing with the Tanakhama. Okay. And then it comes out that the Mishnah works. Meaning we have a first position, which is, a Kohen who's a shepherd is allowed to testify, assuming the owner is a Yisrael, is allowed to testify, because he's going to say to himself, no way, I'm getting it anyway. So he's believed. Rav Shimon Gamliel says a Kohen can testify about any animal that's not his own, even if it's for another Kohen. And Rav Meir says a Kohen can't testify at all. And that gives us now three different positions. Which, again, we don't want more machlokas, but we know that there are three positions in the Mishnah. However, El Lamad Amaroi Kohanim Be'Yisrael Manim Mayas Rav Meir Lashmin and Hayna Tanakama. So the Gemara says, but here's the problem. If you like that first pshat in the Mishnah, it comes out that those three positions are really two. The Chachamim is really Reb Meir. The Tanakhama is Reb Meir. It's one and the same. Because essentially what comes out is that if you're a shepherd who's a Kohen, you can't testify. That's the Tanakhama. And you know what Reb Meir says? Same thing. So the Gemara says there will be a subtle difference between the Tanakhama and Reb Meir. Titania, we learned in the Mishnah, Rav Yeshua ben Kufsai, Omer, Bechor, Bekohen, Sarach, Shnai, Minashuk, Lehaid, Alav. Rav Yishuv ben Kusai says that if you have a Bechor in the house of a Kohen, you need two outsiders to testify. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Amar Afilo Beno, Afilo Bito. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says you can have even a son and daughter testify. Rav Shimon Gamliel is consistent with what he says in our Mishnah. As long as you're not testifying about your own, that's okay. It's still a bit of a chiddush, by the way, that your son and your daughter is considered an outside party. Okay, but still, Rav Shimon Gamliel is consistent. Rav Yossi Amar, Rav Yilu Asar, Vehein B'nei Beiso, Ein Ma'idin Alav. And Rabbi Yossi says, even if it's 10 and they are B'nei Beiso, Ein Ma'idin Alav. But right now, focus all your attention on Rav Yoshua Ben Kufsai. He says that if you have a Bechor in the house of a Kohen, you need Shnayim and Ashuk. You need two outsiders.
How did he get into the house?
Now, those two outsiders can be anybody. Right? Rashi. Tzarek Shnayim and Ashuk, Shnayim Kol Shnayim, V'afilu Kohanim. Ava Kohanim Shabbat Beis Olo. So, just not the Kohanim of your own household. Okay, now, this is going to be a little bit subtle, but that's exactly what the Gemara says. Tanakama, I'm reading Rashi. Tanakama, Islay the Rabbi Yoshua ben Kufsai, the Kama Tanakama Roy Kohanim, Bain Bay Saw, Bain Bay Kohanim, Kid the Precious Taima, Einamanim. Ava Kohanim, the Ama, Namanim. Meaning the Tanakama of our Mishnah is going to make that line in the sand between Kohanim of your household versus external Kohanim. Kohanim of your household, no. They have a vested interest. They're not believed. Kohanim outside your household, they are believed. That's the Tanakama. And then along comes Rav Meir, and Rav Meir says, no, no, and no. Kohanim just simply are not afforded credibility over the issue of testifying about the blemish, period. Okay, now, what we have done over here...
One basic question. When the Tanakama existed, the Kohanim would eat the Bechor anyways. So what's the concern about...
No, because in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you're right, by the way, a lot of this is going to change. Because then he could just simply bring it as a carbon. Yeah. No, that is a very valid point.
What's the
entire discussion over here is post-Beis Mikdash, when the only thing that will now allow us to eat the animal is only a blemish. It could be, I don't know. So it could be that it's different if there's a Beis Mikdash. Could be. The Gemara doesn't speak to that idea. Okay. Kaman az lahadam rav chistam rav ketina safik b'chor shenolad b'yisot tzarech shnayim in ashok. Laha'ir alav. Okay. We're going to give a scenario over here, which is very similar to the general Bechor scenario. A little bit of a twist. You have two animals.
When Rabbi Meir was alive, was there a Beis HaMikdash?
No. Rabbi Meir lived after Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Meir was a student of Rabbi Kiva.
So the
Bechor,
right?
So...
The Israeli has to keep the Bechor.
No, they gave it to a Kohen. So he would... During the Beis HaMikdash? Wait and hope. Now, here, the scenario goes like this. You're Yisrael and you had two animals born in your flock. And one of them was born with a blemish. You just don't know which animal was it. The first one that came out or the second one came out. So now the Kohen stops on your door, knocks on the door and says, hi. And you say, hi. And then he says, okay, Bechor. I'm picking up my Bechor. And you say to him, look, I tell you the truth. One of them is a Bechor, but I don't know which one. And one of them now has a blemish on it. And Hamotzi Mechaver, Olav Araya. Like, you want to come take one from me? Hamotzi Mechaver, Olav Araya. Now, who's going to be determining that this blemish happened organically? Or maybe you put a blemish, or maybe you're the one who put the blemish on.
Or even it's on the wrong one, right?
Right, so Rav Chista says in the name of Rav Ketina, you're going to need two outsiders in order to testify. So who is he subscribed to? So the Gemara says, come on, Rav Yeshua ben Kufsai. Oh yeah. In other words, much like had it been under the ownership of a Kohen, we would need two outsiders. Here, if the beneficiary is Yisrael, you're going to need two outsiders. Okay, now, Rav Nachman Amar Balam Eidan Alav. Okay. Rav Nachman says, you can have the owners testify about this animal. Because, look, it's going to come out now so strange. Because if you don't allow the owners to testify about this animal, let's turn our attention not to Bechor, but to Meiser Behema. Now, Meiser Behema, if the animal gets blemished, you don't have to bring it as a carbon. You can eat it with its blemish. Right? Meiser Behema. So... if you don't allow the owner to testify about it, who's ever going to be able to testify about Meiser Behema? So Meiser Vada, I'm sorry, the Elotei Mahachi Meiser Rameir, me made a love. So the Gemara says, Meiser Vadai Mehemen. So the Gemara says, stop that. In terms of Meiser Behema, you're believed. Why? Because when it comes to Meiser Behema, you know what you can do? You can put the blemish on an animal before you start counting 1 through 10. I know that sounds funny, but before you start counting, you know what all those animals are? Chulin. You want to put a blemish on chulin? That's fine. Even though you know that you're going to count to 10, and even though you know one of them is going to be Meiser Behema, but still that's fine. So we have a general rule. If you have control, you have credibility. If you have the ability to put a blemish on the animal prior to counting, so you have credibility even after you counted. El Safik Bechor La Ramer Mi Meid Alav. Now, but here's a question though. Safik Bechor, meaning you're not even sure if the Bechor belongs to the Kohen. Now, according to Rav Meir, who's testifying about this animal? Kohanim, Rav Meir said, they're out of the discussion. But here, who's the beneficiary of this animal? A Yisrael. According to Rav Meir, once Yisrael becomes a beneficiary, he no longer can testify. So, yeah, so who's going to testify? So now, what do you want to tell me? That's the conclusion? That if the Yisrael stands to be the beneficiary, that means according to Rav Meir, nobody can testify, and then the animal is just going to live a good long life as a Bechor with no one to be able to testify about it. V'hatzanan, and we know that's just simply not true. Shaya Rav Yossi Omer, Kol Shechalif B'Yakoim, Patam and Amatanos, Rav Meir Mechayev. Now, I'm not going to go through this discussion again about the Suffolk Bechor, where the question is, the Kohen comes over to you and says, look, either give me the Bechor or give me the Matanos, and there's a debate between Rav Yossi and Rav Meir, whether or not you have to actually listen to him. Now, the underpinning of that debate is long and complicated and detailed, and I'll say also we did it once before, but I wouldn't mind reviewing it, just not now. Meaning, but what you see from that is that according to Rav Meir, even though it's a Suffolk Bechor, it's possible to eat that animal. Okay? So Elish Mamina Balami Idan Alav Kohanimu de Khashid Amomi Solo Khashid Amome. And so the Gemara says something very interesting. Even according to Rav Meir, who generally speaking says we're gonna discredit, but you know who we're gonna generalize? Kohanim. Kohanim are not believed. Yisraelim are believed. Okay. Now that does sound like a slap in the face, and it may even be a little bit of a slap in the face. But the basic idea is, look, Kohanim, you stand to gain the most. In the world of Bechor, you're generally the people who are going to benefit. So Rav Meir says, you're chashed. You're suspected. You're no ge'a bedaver. We don't believe you. Blanket rule. Yisraelim, how often is this going to happen? Meaning that it's a Suffolk Bechor. It's not going to go to the Kohen. It's retained by Yisrael. He's waiting for a blemish to happen. So, okay, so we'll let the Yisrael testify even according to Rabbi Meir.
The Kohen has to feed the animal, so he has an incentive to have a blemish too.
Correct. Okay, now, what we've done, aside from learn Gemara, is that we've exposed ourselves to a lot of opinions. Meaning, for those of you who have been keeping score at home, we are now three opinions in the Mishnah, two opinions amongst the Amoraim in terms of what the Mishnah means, a further discussion and debate in terms of, I'm sorry, the opinion of Rav Yeshua ben Kufsai, which we didn't even see in our Mishnah. So there's a lot of positions over here, and now we get to Hedi's part of the Gemara today. And who does the halacha follow? Itmar Rav Nachman Amar halacha ke Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and Rava Amar halacha ke Rav Yossi. Okay, so I know it helped a little bit. I know you would prefer more
concrete,
but at least we've narrowed down the playing field. Rav Nachman says halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Remember, Shimon Gamliel says that you can only not testify about your own animal, but you could, even a Kohen can testify about another Kohen's animal. Even a son and daughter can testify about mom or dad's Bechor. Mom's Bechor? Whatever. Maybe. So that is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and that's Rav Nachman's ruling. Rava says the halacha is like Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says your whole family is out of the discussion. Even if they're 10 and they're members of your household, they can't. So the Gemara says, wait a second, what about the following? Rava made the following statement. Animal went into the house, a tamim. Animal comes out of the house with a blemish on it.
Was there anybody in the house?
And Rava says, we can have the people who were in the house testifying. Now, who was in the house? Presumably family members. Right. So the Gemara immediately changes. So the Gemara says, well, no, all the family members were outside the house. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, because look, even though all the family members were out of the house, but this all looks very funny. Meaning the animal went inside the house. I know all the family members were outside, but now the animal comes down, the animal has a blemish, and there are other people in the house. Yeah, you may be worried about chashad over there. Gemara says, in that case, we're not worried about chashad. Okay, Hedy, this may make you a little bit happier. V'hilchasa, k'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel concludes the Gemara. So again, bottom line is, a kohen can testify about another kohen's bechor, and even a son and a daughter can testify about their father's bechor. Now, v'davka ben ovita aval ish dolo maitami isho kegufo dami. Okay, but your wife can't testify. It's interesting. We usually do not differentiate family members, meaning Rabbi Shimon Gamliel allows even a family member to testify about another family member. But your wife is you. Isho Kagufo, we see this idea come up a number of times throughout the Gemara. This is an interesting application because here, essentially what we're saying is that any outsider can testify, but not your wife, because she's really just an extension of you. She's you. Isho Kagufo. All that accepted, coin for coin accepted. Amar Rav Papa Labai, the Rav Meir de Amar. Now, this is a great question coming up. I often wonder about this. You put various positions of Rav Meir together, and you walk away sometimes with some really, really nutty conclusions. Because Rav Meir is, in other words, keep in mind, the Gemara not here, elsewhere, says, Lo yaranu l'sof da tosha Rabbi Meir. Rav Meir was so powerfully insightful. Meaning his positions, we sometimes don't fully understand his positions. He's choshesh lemiyuta, he's worried about the minority. He's a unique thinker. A lot of the times we don't follow the halacha like Rav Meir, but still, he's powerful. He's a powerful thinker. But what happens is, if I take Rav Meir's positions and I put a couple of them together, watch what will happen. So the Gemara does a little bit of this chemistry with Rav Meir, right, in the laboratory. Amalei Rav Papa Labai, Rav Meir damar chashu lo davar lo danu v'lo meido. So let's take two positions of Rav Meir and let's put them together. Rav Meir says that we don't believe Kohanim on Bechor. Period. And Rav Meir says that when you're chashed al davar echad, chashed l'chol atara kula. That once you're suspected in one area of halacha, you lose your credibility over all areas of halacha. Okay. Now that we're here, and we took those two positions of Rameir and you put them together. Kohanim, hachanam lo dina dina. Now you want to tell me that a Kohen cannot be at all involved in the judicial process. Period.
But it's not really right.
Period.
As a Kohen, we can suspect of having made a mum, but the mumcha has to show. So the mumcha renders the judgment,
okay.
Not the Kohen.
All right. The Gemara is going to respond, but I'm just saying, but if you think about it, though, at first glance, it sounds like a good position. It's a logical position. It's bizarre. You're going to take Kohanim and just remove them from the entire judicial process. And we know that's not true. And the Gemara says, Hachanam doladani dina v'aksiv apiyam yeyeh kol rivich ol nega. We follow them. So, Eim adam rav meir l'chashasha, la'ach zekino mi'amar. Essentially, Phil, the Gemara is going to basically say what you said. Look, we're not saying that sir, they're suspected. We're just simply saying that we can't believe them on this regard. Not because there's a real chazakah. They are corrupt on this issue. It's just a chshash ba'alma. It's a concern. But we're not impugning their very being. Okay, now the Gemara says, what about hearsay? Aid me pi aid. Right, now, hearsay in halacha, are we in favor or are we against? Generally speaking, we're against it. Hearsay in halacha does not work. If you have testimony has to be eyewitnesses. First-hand testimony, I saw this. There is one area in halacha where eid mipi eid works, and that is to allow a woman to remarry. Right? The Gemara in the end of Yevamos, long discussion about that. Right? The aguna, eid mipi eid over there is going to work. What about over here in the case of Bechor? Now, we already know that there's a lot of latitude in terms of testimony by Bechor. I know that because, first of all, relatives can testify. I know that because the Gemara earlier said, Afilu Bito, your daughter's testifying. Your daughter testifying in a court of law? No. So in other words, I already know that there is latitude. We are not confining ourselves to the general criteria of Eidus when it comes to in terms of being Matir Bechor. So how about this now? Can we even extend a courtesy, aid me pi aid? So Rav Asi, also Rav Ashi Share. So the Gemara brings a debate. Amalei Rav Asi, Rav Ashi, Va'atan debei Menashe, ein aid me pi aid, kasher ala aidus isha. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we have a rule. It only works for aidus isha to allow a woman to remarry. So tani, ala la aidus sheha isha kshera la bilvad. Anytime a woman is believed, so therefore aid me pi aid is going to work. So, in the world of Eidus Isha, is the testimony of a woman believed? Yes. Is Eid Mipa going to work? Yes. Same story over here. In the world of Bechor, is the testimony of a woman going to be believed? Correct. Yes. Is hearsay, Eid Mipa going to work? The answer is going to be yes. Finishing up this one little sugya, Rav Yemer Achshar Eid Mipa be Bechor. Rav Yemer says he was permitting this hearsay. Kari ala maremar Yemer Shari Bukhra. They call them names. Now, I know in halacha, we're dead set against it. It sounds pejorative. It sounds like, oh, he's a big mako. You want to understand the Gemara a little differently? I would be helpful. V'hilchasa, but the Gemara concludes, Eid mipi eid kashal eidus bechor. The Gemara concludes, it works. Hearsay works by bechor. So in other words, even if you didn't see the mum happen, but you spoke to somebody who saw the mum happen, and then you convey that information to the owner, that works in terms of neimanus, in terms of credibility.